Our lives are defined by key moments, sometimes expected, sometimes unexpected. This podcast explores the stories of extraordinary moments in our everyday lives, the joys and celebrations, as well as the challenges and surprises. These stories provide opportunities to share ideas and takeaways to learn from, to witness moments where love becomes a living, breathing action that showcases strength, resilience, beauty, and humanity. I am your host, Ellen Adair, and welcome to Love Takes Action, brought to you by New York Life, helping people act on their love and successfully navigate life's biggest choices since 1845.
Today, we're talking with an immigrant farming family about self-determination and controlling their economic future in order to build a better life here in America.
My family and many other Hmong families were barely making it. And I didn't want my life to be farming. I thought success was having a job with air conditioning in the summertime.
We saw value in farming, and that's what connected us to come back to farming.
So in many ways, Jansen and I and Asha were just living this American story.
And we'll speak with a lawyer who has worked in private practice and within the public sector on legal issues facing countless farmers across the country.
I think it's important that we listen to each other's stories. That's when you stop seeing someone as an other and you hear who they are. They just pour love into their crops and what they're doing. That dollar that stays in our community really, you know, generates more than a dollar in community impact.
Today, we have the pleasure to begin with three generations of Hangs, a Hmong farming family from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. In 2012, the matriarch of the Hang family, Foa, and other elders in their community decided it was time to take more control of their lives and begin to invest directly into their future. Her two adult children, Paku and Jansen, helped the farmers form HAFA, an acronym for the Hmong American Farmers Association. Throughout the episode, we'll speak with Foa, Paku, Jansen, and their 11-year-old niece, Asha. Let's begin with Paku, Jansen's sister and the former executive director of HAFA. Paku, how important is farming in the Hmong community?
Wow. It's not even that it's important, it's that it's synonymous. It's at the center of Hmong life. For example, Hmong rituals, Hmong holidays, our Hmong New Year is aligned with the agricultural calendar. So we kick off our new year, we celebrate our new year at the end of harvest.
Can you tell me a little bit about the Hmong American Farmers Association, or HAFA?
HAFA is a nonprofit that's based in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the mission of the organization is to really build the capacity of Hmong farmers and to help Hmong farmers and their families build community wealth. So for a long time in Minnesota, Hmong farmers were really at the forefront of the local foods movement. They are the majority of farmers at the local farmers market in St. Paul and Minneapolis, and they really are the ones that are providing the fresh mixed vegetables to, you know, folks in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. But even though they were the driving force for this local foods movement, many of them were not making as much money as other Minnesotan vegetable growers were making. And so in 2012, Hmong farmers got together and they formed the Hmong American Farmers Association as a membership-based organization to really get a chance to build the community wealth that they saw around them, but they didn't have access to.
From the beginning, HAFA was really self-directed, wasn't it?
Yes. Ellen, I remember the moment so clearly. So we had gathered a number of Hmong farmers together, and they were going to be presenting to some socially responsible investors about their challenges farming in an urban setting. And it was a wonderful meeting, and the Hmong farmers really felt like they were seen for the first time and that their labor was recognized and was exalted. And after all the investors left, we were debriefing with many of these farmers. And this question came up, you know, what can we do really to support Hmong farmers? And I remember so distinctly this older Hmong grandma. She stood up and she had this hat that was kind of like, you know, crooked. And she stood up and she said, "We have to stop waiting for someone to come and save us. We can save ourselves." You know, we call this concept self-determination, right? they had a sense of like what is right and wrong, and that I can be the steward of my own destiny. And that was the birth moment for Hafa. And I always remember that because it is about building capacity. It is about building wealth. It is about lifting the narrative among farmers. But at the end of the day, it's about people claiming themselves and their self-worth.
If I may add another thing too, Ellen.
Of course. Yes, please. Go ahead, Jansen.
One of the biggest thing that what all of our farmers, Hmong farmers, saw in each other was that coming to a place together, right? Of like-minded, shared value individuals here. And that when we want to create system change, that individually one person does not have the capacity or the power to do so. And so if we really want to create this change, that we need to come together, and we do it, as Baku had mentioned, coming together with the force, the same kind of force to create that change.
Yeah. Our listeners might like to know that Baku was the former executive director and Jansen is the current executive director of Hafa. Next, I'd like to ask your mom, Fua, as an elder in the community who was at the center of the meeting in 2012, what was on your mind at the time?
My purpose in joining with others to form Hafa was partly because I loved farming and because I knew we needed an organized entity to support and motivate Hmong farmers. Long after I'm gone, I hope Hafa will continue to be a haven for my children, my grandchildren, and other young Hmong advocates who care about our community. I hope they will teach others what I know to be true. That farming can feed your body and your spirit today, tomorrow, and beyond.
With the creation of Hafa in 2012, there was this opportunity for the farmers to get more independence in their lives. What were the challenges facing them at that time?
Hmong farmers were facing a lot of challenges in this moment in agriculture. One of the most important challenges is that they didn't have access to land. And I'm not just talking about any type of land, but I'm talking specifically about farmland that was close to their markets, which was close to the Twin Cities. Because if you imagine, if you're someone who's selling to the farmer's market, you're going to be traveling to that farm or to that garden or that land multiple times a day. So you can't be driving an hour out. So it had to be farmland that was close to the Twin Cities. And it also had to be farmland that you could have long-term access to. Number two, they didn't have access to other markets besides the farmers markets. And so the farmers market is wonderful because, you know, Ellen, you were just alluding to the vibrancy, the customers, the community there. But truthfully, as a farmer, you take your produce to the farmers market, and if it's raining, you have no control over who comes. Right? You take all the things that you've grown, you bring to the farmer's market, there's no guarantee that it's going to sell at the price point you want or that it's all going to go. And so Hmong farmers wanted other types of markets, whether it's a farm to school market, maybe farm to hospital, maybe even a CSA, a community supported agriculture, also known as a CSA. Number two. Number three, they didn't have access to capital or credit. And this is really important because, you know, I can be a wonderful farmer. I can have access to a land, you know, for long term, I can have a really vibrant market. But if I don't have access to additional capital to maybe buy that land or buy a tractor that will help me make my operation much more efficient, then I'm going to be stuck there. I'm going to be, you know, bounded by how much I can grow, how much money I can make, because I don't have access to additional funds to invest to grow my business. And then number four and number five, Hmong farmers didn't have access to any type of training or any type of research that was being done in the local universities. And so when you don't have access to, let's say, trainings, because most of those trainings at the time were all done in English. And again, Hmong people, we come from an oral tradition, right? So folks didn't necessarily speak or read English. They didn't know ways to improve their growing techniques, right? Because they didn't have that training, they may not have known, even though they were organic, they didn't know how to get certified organic. And then our land grant universities have such a rich tradition of doing research in agriculture, right? Maybe there's a new variety of potatoes they're going to grow. Maybe they're going to investigate a certain pest that's really, you know, decimating raspberries. But if you are, again, a poor, non-English speaking, mixed vegetable producers, how do you access that research to bring that technique back to you? And because of these five things, not having access to land, not having access to markets, not having access to capital and credit, not having access to training or research, Hmong farmers were only earning about 60 cents to every dollar that the mainstream Minnesotan white vegetable grower was making. And that really stumped their growth, and it really limited the type of wealth that they could build over the years. I also wanted to add, Alan, that when we started HAFA, we knew that the challenges confronting Hmong farmers were not singular. They were generational, they were communal, they were dynamic. And so one person can't go against these forces. We knew that we had to bound up our power, we had to unite our power that would be equal to the forces that were creating some of these challenges for Hmong farmers. And that's why when we started HAFA, we were so intentional about having it be a membership-based organization, because we wanted people to see each other, and not only just see each other, but see the power of the unit, the power of the community.
Yeah, of course. Earlier, you had mentioned the CSA model as a way to expand your markets. My understanding is that with the CSA, I'd buy shares in a farm before the growing season, and then those funds would help the farmer with expenses, seeds, labor, and so on. And then I would get a portion of the harvest as the season goes on. So how has this CSA model worked for HAFA?
What HAFA is always investing in is how do we grow our farmers, right? So that they will have a financially sustainable farm business operation. And that community support agriculture was a way to go beside the farmers market system. So the concept of the community support agriculture was more to provide security, financial stability for Hmong farmers. Now at HAFA, what we've done is that we have created, we call this workplace CSA program, where we collaborate with a number of partner organizations, the city of Minneapolis, and their employees with the Park and Rec Center, with city halls, and we started promoting that, right? And so people start signing up like, yes, we want to support local farmers, we want to support immigrant minority farmers. And as a result of that, that kind of also led to, you know, other collaboration with, you know, MHealth Fairview, and our VeggieRx program, where it specifically targeted low-income, food insecure families who has been diagnosed with chronic illnesses, whether that's like cardiovascular, obesities, diabetes here. And in that collaboration and partnership with MHealth Fairview was a way to also use food as medicine to address these health concerns as well. And you know, within that first year, in our partnership with MHealth Fairview, the biometrics and everything came back, and they were stunning. At the beginning, they did an assessment at the beginning of the program and at the end of the program, and what they found out that a number of their patients who were diagnosed with diabetes, their A1C, which is the marker for diabetes, significantly dropped because of healthy food consumption. So that was amazing. So it wasn't just about, oh, having access to fresh, healthy food, and consuming healthy food, but then again, it was a source of medicine, but at the same time, it was also a source of social connectedness.
And Ellen, I think this is really important to note what Dan just said, because, you know, in this country, healthy food, fresh food is actually more expensive than fast food, unhealthy food. You know, we have to unpack that. That's like a whole thesis. But I think that VeggieRx program and what Janssen alluded to about the change in folks' A1C is a real testimony to the fact that fresh food, you know, it's like poor people don't have access to the things that they need. And yet we continue to penalize them, right? Low-income people, food-insecure people. And what HAFA was doing in the VeggieRx program was not only saying, hey, you're going to have access to this food, but we're also going to build your social connectedness to your doctor, to the people who work at the clinic, so that when you come and pick up that CSA share, that VeggieRx share every week, you're not going to be afraid about your clinic anymore. You're going to build a trustworthy bond with your doctor so that maybe you have something that you were embarrassed about. Now that you trust that doctor or that nurse, you're going to share with them. And maybe that's what, that can lead to preventative care, that can lead to more holistic care. So it was about access to food, which is a human right, but it was also access to, you know, social capital and the social determinants of health so that people can have really holistic, healthy care.
Yeah, I know the American Heart Association awarded a grant to HAFA because of this work with the VeggieRx program and the incredible results in your local Minneapolis-St. Paul community.
Ellen, we, HAFA, the Hmong American Farmers, we are so thankful for the support of American Heart Association and their support and the belief in the mission of HAFA and also in the work that HAFA was doing. So as a result of the American Heart Association and their support, that HAFA was able to implement their very first federally recognized food safety training for Hmong farmers. And why I say this is that as a result of the Food Safety Modernization Act, which the federal regulation is requiring that every single producer must comply and must have this training. And as a result of that, when these food safety practice trainings and curriculum came out, they're only conducted in two languages, either English or Spanish. Hmong farmers were at a complete disadvantage. And so as a result, the American Heart Association that kind of really led and helped us create that very first bicultural, bilingual Hmong produce safety training course. It wasn't just in Minnesota. That actually had a ripple effect all across the United States, where not only did we train Hmong farmers in Minnesota, we trained Hmong farmers in Missouri, we trained Hmong farmers in California, and now over 50 Hmong farmers have this certification that is federally recognized. It's not just the work of HAFA of this transformation, but it's the work and support of American Heart Association that made us transformational as well.
That's so incredible.
So Alan, you might not even know this, but we actually started farming because our parents wanted to send us to Catholic schools, but it was too expensive. We couldn't afford it. And so we started first growing cucumbers and selling the cucumbers to Getney Pickles, that's headquartered in Minnesota. And then afterwards we found out, oh, you could grow vegetables and sell them at the farmer's market. And that's what we did. And that was supposed to be our pathway to a better life. If you didn't win the lottery, the second plan was to get a good education. And for me, I think about this a lot because I used to hate farming. Like, it was such a chore to go to the garden or the farm. And then nowadays, Asha, all my mom and my dad's grandchildren, Landon, Mason, Ian, Chufu, Chacha, they love to go to the farm. They're like, no, no, I want to go. You're like, it's 40 degrees outside. It's so cold. No, I want to go. I want to go. And in one generation, to have a different emotion, a different attachment to the farm, for me, I think it's the real success, right? That it's not a place of a chore, it's not the place of shame and lack of access. And now it becomes a place of community, it becomes a place of like lifting myself up, it becomes a place of like how I'm having fun and lightness. And that is really the testimony to my mom and my dad's perseverance and the gift that they gave their children.
Absolutely. Asha, you've been so patient while the adults do all the talking. As an 11-year-old who's part of the next generation, what do you like to do at the farm?
Well, I enjoy not just being on the farm, but I enjoy like running around it. I really like washing different plants. A thing that I really enjoy is once everything's like picked already, I can go around, like run around and like grab my own tomatoes and like cucumbers to bring home. I really like cucumbers with paprika and salt.
And I know you're very involved in the summers at the farmer's market. What's that like?
I think it's really kind of fun in my experience because I like to talk to people and give them different recipes. For a simple snack I really like to eat is kale chips, where you just like take the leaf part off the kale and then you add like olive oil and salt on top, and then you mix it together and then you put it in the oven for a little bit and then you take it out. It's really good and crunchy.
Yes, so good. I love kale chips. I do the same thing with green beans. I call them green bean fries. Jansen, how do you feel Asha's relationship with farming compares to your own childhood?
We hated farming. It was so onerous, it was laborious. We'd be under scorching sun picking cucumbers and it was like prickly over your arms, you know, or digging potatoes and you're all dirty and your face is all dirty. And so us seven siblings, you know, at times we would sit there and we would unionize and we would boycott. We're like, no, we're not gonna go to the field today, mom and dad. We hated it, it's not fair. Our friends are taking these vacations, going up north, taking trips, and we're stuck here, summer in and summer out here. So we always vow to each other, okay, you know what? We're going to study really hard and never look back.
I remember in college, I wanted to be an investment banker. I wanted that because growing up, we were so poor, and I hated farming. And I didn't want my life to be farming. I thought success was having a job with air conditioning in the summertime. And I was really lucky. I had a wonderful job in social responsible investments. I met amazing people. And yet my mom and my dad would always talk about, they didn't use the word social justice. But if we were at the farmer's market and if you saw someone and they couldn't afford something, so often my mom and my dad would just say, hey, take these tomatoes. It's okay, grandma, just take them home, right? Or we would be at the farmer's market and we would have maybe another Hmong farmer who was having difficulties communicating with a customer. And my mom and my dad would say, go over there and help that auntie. And so my parents modeled what it meant to be in community, not just to be a part of a community, but as a verb, how to be in a community. And so I wanted to be an investment banker, and yet there was something that was missing, that in community part. And at the end of the day, that was the string that pulled me back to come back to Twin Cities to do the work that I'm doing right now. That's really rooted in building power for the most disenfranchised and marginalized about us. Who would have thought that, you know, we did farming to get an education in Catholic schools, but those teachings about not only humility, but the teachings about, you know, being the Good Samaritan and loving each other, that was really the foundation that they were setting. So, and I would just say that at the end of the day, that's the wealth that matters.
Yes, absolutely. That's really such a gift your parents gave you.
The funny thing is that our story is actually not that different from a lot of other Norwegian or Swedish, you know, or German family folks whose grandma and grandpa, Nana, they had a family farm. That it was the grandparents were like, no, get an education. And then the kids got an education and they moved away from the family farm. So in many ways, Jansen and I and Asha, we're just living this American story just with a different ethnicity.
But the biggest thing is that we also came back. And why we came back is that we saw value in farming. And that's what connected us to come back to farming. And that value, as my parents always said, that is hard work, right? And that the same hard work that you apply to farming, you can apply to any career and be successful. Right? And that is a value that, you know, this generation or the younger generation are seeing differently because they weren't forced to be in the field, right? They have the options like, oh, do I want to go to the farm? Do I want to go to the farmer's market? Oh, it's so fun just being interacting with a number of customers. Oh, it's so great to see these snap peas grow and now I have to harvest. Or, you know, oh, this is how kale grow? Wow, this is what kale chip looks like? Oh, and I'm picking kales and I'm turning to kale chips, right?
Foa, what is it like to see the way your children have taken the gifts you gave them and passed them along to so many other people?
I am so proud of my children who used my struggles as an impetus to create HAFA, an organization that benefits not just me, but so many other Hmong farmers. They, my children, are my true legacy.
Ellen, can I add something to that? Because all of our life, we've always been interpreting for our parents. And so the words that Jansen and I speak, we're just the mouthpiece. The real ideas, the real values, that's my mom and my dad.
What our parents have invested so much into us is also an opportunity that we need to reinvest back into our community. Because it's not just our story, it's not just the Hang family story, but it's the Hmong farming story.
Yes. Jansen, Paku, Foa, and Asha, thank you all for joining us and sharing your family's incredible story with us. Next, we're so grateful to have Susan Stokes with us. She's a partner at the law firm of Lind, Jensen, Sullivan, and Peterson in Minneapolis, and has worked with farmers, including many Hmong American farmers in Minnesota. She's dealt with a wide array of issues affecting farmers in private practice, at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and as executive director of Farmers Legal Action Group. She's been working closely with HAFA on various legal issues. Susan, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Ellen, thank you for inviting me. It's such a pleasure to be here to talk about Hmong American Farmers Association and farming in general. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about.
The Hmong farmers have done an incredible job with their stewardship, haven't they? Not just financially, obviously, but culturally and socially.
That's exactly right. So if you consider a farmer who's renting a piece of land from year to year, they're not going to make investments in the soil. They're not going to plant perennials that are going to help build the soil quality. They're not going to invest in conservation practices. When you look at what HAFA has done over the past 10 years, They've engaged in really innovative partnerships with the University of Minnesota, with the Department of Natural Resources, and they're investing in their soil and their land with their practices and what they're planting. And that has benefits for the soil, it has benefits for the water, and then it also helps their markets because they're able to grow these perennials that are harder to come by and they can bring a better price. So it's a win-win if you can provide that kind of secure access to farmland.
That kind of win-win is what any business, any venture is always looking for.
Absolutely. And in agriculture, you can really make a big impact that way. You know, we have some innovative programs here in Minnesota with regard to water quality and how to make sure that our groundwater is kept clean. And Haffa is such a good steward of their resources. They are adjacent to the Vermilion River. And so they've worked with the DNR here in Minnesota to help make that an aquatic management area. And, you know, that's good for everybody. It's good for the land. It's good for the farmers. It's good for the neighbors. And it's good for the fish.
I love what you said, that it's good for the neighbors, because it's also a kind of a bridge building between people who have different cultural backgrounds or ethnic heritage, to be able to see the other people not as an other, but as part of an us. Seeing an other is just about a lack of knowledge, but us is the only real truth.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that we listen to each other's stories. That's when you stop seeing someone as an other and you hear who they are. And so, you know, when I sat in this mediation and I heard the stories of my clients and how they crossed the Mekong River, for instance, and I don't know why it took me so long to have this dawn on me, but every Hmong person who fled the war had to cross the Mekong River. So that neighbor with the loaded shotgun who was mad because his deer weren't coming on his lawn anymore, well, how could he fail to see how extraordinary these people were when they started talking about how they came here and why they came here and who they are and what they're doing? And so Haffa is so good at telling that story. They bring people on their farm. They bring hundreds of people on their farm every year, maybe thousands. And they tell the story of who they are and what they're doing. And you can't fail to stop seeing someone as an other when you meet their children and their grandchildren, and at the farmer's market when you engage in a conversation with this young person like Asha. I mean, she's absolutely delightful and charming and bright, as you said. She's just the best that you can imagine in a young person, and she's there excited about selling cucumbers. She loves to go to the farm and pick cucumbers. You know, these are not others anymore. These are people who welcome you into their family and their community, and they're showing up. And now it's just that the Hmong American farmers at the farmer's market are fixtures now here. And people so love to go to the Minneapolis and St. Paul farmer's market on the weekends. And more than half of the vendors are Hmong farmers. And it's just a part of our culture now. And it's just all that colorful produce and the feeling of community that happens there. It's really a beautiful thing. And I think most people are grateful that they're here and that they're bringing this richness to our community.
Richness, exactly. It's not just about the food, which is, of course, critically important to our health and our being, but it's also about the way in which they're feeding the fabric of the community itself.
They are literally feeding us and reflecting in those markets. They reflect sort of the best of us, right? Because everyone there is feeling a part of something, and it's reflected there, and they show up and they're a part of that. And it is hard work. Oh my gosh. You know, the labor that's required to grow vegetables and harvest them and clean them and bring them to market and be there so early in the morning and stay till 2 in the afternoon and be pleasant. And it's so much work. And I've not been a farmer myself, but whenever I have a chance, I go to a farm. That's my favorite part of my job. And I just have such an appreciation for just seeing what they do and how they do it with so much love. They just pour love into their crops and what they're doing.
Yeah, we've really come to understand that local farmers do make our lives better. Are there things that we can do to help, like joining a CSA?
You mentioned CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and that is a wonderful way to connect directly with your farmer. And that not just connects you to the farmer and builds that relationship, it cuts out the middleman. So they're getting, you know, 100% of the dollars that you're paying. You know, when you go buy things at the grocery store, you know, the farmer's getting pennies on the dollar for what's bought there. So, you know, direct purchasing from your farm is becoming more and more common. There are websites, there are Minnesota has a Minnesota Grown directory that connects you to farmers who sell everything. You can buy honey directly from farmers and beef and vegetables and eggs. That is just a part of feeding your local community. So, you know, they feed us and we can feed them back by keeping that money local. And then it has a multiplier effect. That dollar that stays in our community really, you know, generates more than a dollar in community impact.
But HAFA has also risen to national prominence too. Their reach and their influence as leaders has really grown beyond Minnesota.
Well, that's right. I mean, what HAFA has built is fairly unique because they have not just helped the Hmong farmers that they're working with. They built this very vibrant and visible community asset, and they've empowered the farmers that they work with. They've increased the assets and the wealth of the farmers they're working with. And that has just rippled through the community. And they have become a model nationwide, to the point where their executive director, Jansen Hang, was invited to sit on this advisory committee for the United States Department of Agriculture, advising the department on equity issues. And it's quite an honor for him to be asked, and he's going to be a great contributor on that. There has been, in the past, a longstanding history of discrimination against farmers of color, and this USDA is trying to address that, and they're trying to make sure that they can be more responsive to the diverse group of farmers that are farming in our country. He will bring a great perspective to that advisory committee based on all the work that he's done and his perspective and his experience in his community.
Yeah, I'm sure that Jansen and HAFA will continue to make an even larger impact going forward. Thanks for talking to us, Susan. And thank you for joining us on this episode and throughout the first season of Love Takes Action. If you like what you heard today or during any of our other episodes this season, we invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. You can add your comments and share the link with your friends and family. It's a chance to celebrate the voices of our inspiring guests and their stories. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or visit our website at newyorklife.com.
Love Takes Action is brought to you by New York Life Insurance Company and is for general informational purposes only. References to any financial products or strategies are solely incidental and may not be construed as solicitation. The views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guests, and experts, and do not necessarily represent the opinions or viewpoints of New York Life Insurance Company or its subsidiaries.